I don't have any slides, so I'll try and not bore you. Alan asked me to give a reflection on commissioning, creating, and using the Mac. So just because I don't have slides, I'll tell you what I'm going to say. I'm going to talk about commissioning the building, and I'm going to give you an inverse of the great wisdom of one of our greatest philosophers, Donald Rumsfeld. I'm going to talk about the struggles that we have along the way with architects. I'm going to talk about the absolute requirement for trust and respect between client and architect, and I'll just talk a little bit at the end about the reaction to the building. I had my first conversation about creating what was now become the Mac in 1996 with a consultant who had been appointed by the Arts Council and DECAL to create a new City Centre Arts Centre. And one of the ills or benefits of having a client from the get-go has brought something to the process, probably. A very, very small team of us, myself and Gillian, the Director of Programmes, and Wanda, the Director of Marketing Comms, and the trustees of what was then OMAC, and is now the Mac, have stayed with the process throughout. And it was thanks to Barry Todd, who's one of our trustees. I'm sure some of you know Barry, but he led that early commissioning phase. I'm not an architect, I'm a layperson, an arts person, a manager of the arts. So not only had I never run a design competition, it soon emerged that I didn't know how to make plans. I don't have any sense of direction, and so in that sense it was hard for us at the beginning to understand what each other was talking about. But it was thanks to Barry that we ran an open design competition, and he was very keen that the process we ran would exclude newer, emerging, or young architectural practices, and that they would be given a chance to compete at the same level as the larger firms. So Viva commissioned a design competition on our behalf. Is there anybody here from CPD? CPD. We got into the tussle with CPD in terms of procurement of the building.
I should explain we are recording.
Fine, that's absolutely fine. we got into a little bit of a conversation that lasted for a good 7 months about how the building should be procured. At that time, CPD was promoting the design and build procurement method. And on Barry's advice, we were very sure that was probably not the best way to procure the building, given its very particular challenges in terms of its really complexity and its technical requirements. So we went for what we call the modified traditional procurement route. And one of the little tricks that I'm really eternally grateful to Barry for having had the idea for was that we engaged really, really early with the planning department, so long before. It actually informed part of the project brief that we had drafted in consultation with the planning department. Sort of guidelines, planning guidelines, very particular, very practical. Things like the building can go to such a height, and it's likely that its external facade should take a candle. That's sort of, I mean, you're all welcome to have a look at it. But it meant that we were able to give the competing teams quite a very firm steer in terms of how they would respond to the project brief, which was very detailed. It didn't stop us from having I think it was a Brazilian firm who suggested a purple blob, which was really interesting to me in the design and competition process, because given the fact that we were going to be cheap by Java with a very distinct architectural style, and that we knew that it was highly unlikely that the building we commissioned would be of the same architectural style, I had begun to think, gosh, is the best way to go to really go at odds with that? To be really very much in opposition to it. And looking at the purple blob and seeing how badly it served us and how little it did to sort of complement the St. Alban's Square design, you know, that was a testing point for me that, you know, going too far is not going to do any of us any favours. The development of the project, which again was led by Barry Todd, he was able to really guide me in terms of putting into words and phrases that architects would understand what we wanted, because at that point, even in 2006, I think we always knew what we didn't want. We weren't always able to articulate what it was we did want, but we were very sure that we didn't want a building that felt like an aircraft tower when you came into it. This was a building that was going to try and achieve a different set of objectives for the city than those which were being achieved by the Waterfront Hall. The Waterfront Hall was designed and built in a phase where Belfast was emerging from a space, I think, at a time when it didn't really have an architectural identity, and there was a sense of in the best sense of the word, grandiosity about the design of the building, which was about civic pride and the city being ready to have the kind of building that the Waterfront Hall is. We wanted a space that was much, we said words like more than welcoming. We wanted to be distinctly of Belfast. And only now that we have the building do we realise exactly what we meant by that. Patrick Hall might perfectly and expertly interpret that. And it's interesting to me that there was a time not that long ago when probably subconsciously those of us in Belfast would never have wanted to define ourselves all as being from Belfast. We would have wanted to pretend we were from England, and so lots of us talk with English accents at that time. At that point, I didn't want us to have an arts centre that could be seen, the identity of arts centre, seen in other parts of the UK and Ireland. We wanted it to reflect the personality of the art we'd be creating within it, which was warm and exciting and young, not necessarily in age, but in an aesthetic and in a mental headspace. I wanted it to be quirky, so that the drop ceilings that had gone at night going into the foyer space reflected the fact that the reason, one of the many reasons people actually choose not to sit in front of their TV in a comfy couch, but instead come out to a theatre or a gallery to experience art in a collective sense, has to do with a yearning to be in a crowd. And buildings which work against that, because, I mean, I understand why. If you've got a hall that needs to accommodate 1,200 people, you need to have public spaces and public foyers that can do so in a way which is healthy and safe. On the other hand, we had an opportunity, because our spaces were smaller, to provide that little crush. You know, there is something about going up against people, however much you like or dislike them, that really brings energy with it. I just remember one of the things, which is that the booths we have on the ground floor, at one point that was going to be the retail space. It was never a satisfactory retail space, but the only thing that we didn't deliver that was in the original schedule of accommodation, there were all sorts of reasons for that that I'm not worried with. But after we decided to have the little intimate booths, a writer and director who's a friend and colleague sort of sidled up to one of our trustees at a party and said, do you know what you need for the land to be a really perfect theatre space? You need to have small spaces where you can put the shirt out of what you've just seen on stage and really, really go for it. And that sort of space where people can huddle doesn't just happen. You have to create opportunities for that kind of intimate experience alongside the glory and splendour of the atrium space, I think, is design genius. Gareth Hoskins chaired the competition phase, and there was something about, I remember back when Alistair was talking, it was very clear, and I'm sure you agree, that having a white knight and Alistair Meeker, they're architect artists. They think as artists think. So there was a really, really simpatico there between Omar, who then was an Hackathon White Knight. This didn't come in, obviously you know how you regulated competition processes are, but in retrospect, there was something about the match in a very small and highly ambitious arts organisation, as we were then, with a very small and highly ambitious architectural practice. So there was a meeting of minds there, and although we didn't know at the time, a real design connection that has stood us in good stead. One of the times whenever I knew that I began to realise that Hackathon White Knight had made it was when I saw how they responded to a thing that we put in the brief, which was that we wanted them to inform their design with the input and support of a visual art consultant. Now everybody, all the competing, this was at shortlist stage obviously, all the competing design firms had a real struggle with what a visual art consultant is, and that's because there's no such thing really. There are career curators, and there are academics, and there are people who work in museums. But when we saw that Hackathon White Knight had suggested that their visual art consultant would be Fiona Carney, who is the director of the Buxton in Cork, we realised they knew, they responded to the group and said that this needs to be a successful working building. It is first and foremost an arts building that needs to facilitate the creation of spectacular art, and quite often in architectural terms, that's got to do with back of house functionality rather than front of house. It's got to do with having the right size of dressing rooms, workshop space, storage space, those kind of functional issues rather than the beauty that we see in the front of house. So going on to Donald Rumsfeld and his thesis in terms of we know what we don't know. At the outset, we knew what we didn't know. One of the advantages of it taking so long to get to this point was that we, as a very, very small team, availed the opportunity to go around lots and lots of newly built arts venues throughout the UK and Ireland and further afield. And again, we found ourselves having the same kinds of conversations with people who had nothing to do with the original intent or the original design brief. Those people have long since gone, maybe three or four generations before, in terms of work generations. And it became clear that quite often local authorities had had a vision which was quite often about people, which was about the local word down the road, had marks, had a theatre, we want one. And that isn't always the best way to begin. But aside from that, when we saw these really sometimes very obvious mistakes, such as not adequate storage, but no storage, we asked the same question, which was, who decided that and how did it happen? And not the people we were talking to didn't know the answer, but it became very, very clear to us very soon that it was because there was a massive lack of engagement with the users. So we had never thought, myself and Gillian Omnia and the board, we'd never thought that we'd know the answers for how to deliver a perfect building, because there was no such thing. But it became very clear that there was something about maybe with respect, architects presenting themselves as having all the answers and the client accepting that. We never accepted that because we think this is too difficult. I think what architects do is tile over the head difficult. I have so much respect. I couldn't even begin to imagine how to do it. But you don't have all the answers. So we insisted in the design process that came after a little bit of happening like that, that we wrapped ourselves around with set designers and theatre technicians and actors and dancers and choreographers and gallerists and curators, people who worked in these buildings, people like Fiona Carney, and who knew how difficult it was going to be if the service elevator was big enough for the door outside it wasn't. So those kinds of issues, I think, helped avoid some of the obvious mistakes. One of the worst things anybody ever said to me was, good clients get good buildings. I think it was Peter Hunter, the architect who advised Lagenside. And that, he said it to me really early on, and you can imagine the weight of responsibility that places upon a client. But he was right. It's not to say that this building was going to be great clients, not at all, but there was that sort of woke me up to make me realise, gosh, there's so much responsibility here, I'm going to have to really, really push. Struggles, I said I would talk to you about our struggles. I really did mean it when I said I couldn't read plans. I didn't understand what Alistair and Ian and Mark were showing us. And I remember they kept talking about a void space, and one of the real eureka moments for me was when I saw the void space, which is a little tiny V up on the fifth floor. I was like, maybe we can't see it anymore.
Yeah, between the first and second, the little wedge.
The little wedge?
Yeah.
And they kept showing it to me in the plans. I couldn't get it. So we had, in the early stages, we had a whole series of conversations with us being our guests and saying, what does it look like? What does it feel like? And Alistair and Ian Mark tried really, really hard to convey that to us. But I think if at that point we acknowledge that there was always going to be a gap, it's at that point where the leap of faith has to occur between the client and architect, where you have to have established a degree of trust, and we did that over and over and over again. Over and over again, Hackett went and proved to us that their aesthetic matched ours, that what we liked, they liked, and what we didn't like, they didn't like. So that became a lot easier. Permeability, that makes me mad so much. Alistair used to talk about the permeability of the building, and I know what permeability means, but I didn't know what it felt like until on the 19th of April. It was the gala launch, and it was always highly grand. And right at the end of the evening, there were about 600 people downstairs on the ground floor. And I sat in one of the blue couches on the first floor with my husband. We spent 3 minutes talking together, and it was completely permeable. I felt totally connected to what was going on the ground floor, just as I was doing a second route. And it was great. Our journey was great. I can't believe that we've wiped out the colour and have seen ours. It was really beautiful, making it look great. we did, it was a challenge for me. We joked about it all the time. I continued to joke about it. I used to say that I would insist that all lives to have numbers more fluorescent pink in order to introduce colour to the building. But I didn't understand, and now I know, that when Alistair talked about the warmth of the brick, that it would just bring so much life and warmth to the building. He's quite right. But there is something for you as architects to just appreciate when you're talking to your clients, that we don't see things the way you do. It isn't as clear to us as it is to you. The journey with Grey has been amazing, and it came home to me that there was one point where we were thinking about painting the gorgeous watermark concrete. We're not thinking about that anymore. I talk to very people who don't know anything about it. I take advice from absolutely anybody who's done the film and what we've done, but it is hard to take advice from people who haven't gone through the same sort of journey. And so, a couple of days ago in a library, and the theatre director sat down and told us what we need to do, which included painting the concrete. You know, it's a little bit easier to set that aside now. But the fact that when it came time, I mean, there was a way back at the start, we had a £415,000 budget for those fixtures and fittings, and in the back of our heads, we sort of thought, well, we can introduce, if the grey is a little too cool, we can introduce colour with those fixtures and fittings. And of course, when it came time to do that, it was well done in the design process. And we've got the sand inside the building. And the thought of plonking a purple or a red couch in was a travesty that we couldn't possibly have envisaged. And so it makes me laugh so much that beautiful leather couch is the colour of concrete. We chose it, and I think it's fantastic. Also, that was a journey for you, Mr.
Was.
Yeah, you went on a journey for Button Tufted.
Still
on a journey. Oh yeah, trusting our architects, trust and respect. There's no question that it's been, I suppose, as you said at the outset, the most extraordinary and joyful, life-enhancing, frustrating, fearful, fear-inducing process I think I've ever undergone. And the first time I was in the building, when they started to actually build it, it was very unpleasant. And the only other time I felt that way was when they told me I was having twins. It was exactly the same feeling, because at that point, it was too late. And of course, we adore this building. I cannot believe that I get to work in this building every day. I can't believe that I've been part of contributing to making it happen. It feels like the most huge life privilege. It's completely amazing, because there was one point, you do know that the building was only, it was never about the building for us, it was about the art. The building was a byproduct, it was going to, it was means to the end, which was about creating amazing art. And there was a point, one point in the process, where it finally occurred to me, oh, good grief, there's going to be a building here forever. This building's going to be here for 300 years, so long after we're all gone, and that's an amazing thing to be part of. Just mind-blowing. It's a gift. It's been a gift to work with Angelo and Mike. It has. The fact that I don't mean to embarrass Alistair, but the fact that they are such gentlemen and women means that it has been, of course, with this push and pull between a client and an architect, it was a loss. But to have that deep abiding respect for their artistic vision, for the excruciating difficulty of what it is that they have managed to achieve, far outweighs any of the minor issues. It made me laugh so much though whenever you go through the St. Anne's Square door, and we recently put a little display board up to try and tell people what's on the building, the art. And it's been more difficult. I wouldn't say it's more difficult than we get the building up, but and when we finally got it up, and we're trying to sell tickets for a show, we just got it up and these horrific gold pins went in. And they were quite jarring. Brought in a bag of beautiful clear pins to put on him. And you know, on one hand, that's about worship, but I suppose I say this all the time. The only people I think that this building matters as much as it does to us is my home and my wife. And that's wonderful. And it goes right back to the competition. We had made it, and sorry, I'm going to wrap up soon, we made it really explicit to the painting teams that the quality and the strength of the integrated design team, which was led by the architect, was going to be absolutely critical. That it wasn't just a lack of architectural practice, we were pointing it was an IDT integrated design team. And the fact that One grey aunt, very successful, another firm came in with one architect. He didn't bring a single team member with him because he really genuinely said to us that he could do it all himself. And then contrasting that with the fact that there was hardly enough. There were receipts for the Hannah Bowman Night team when they came in because they brought a team. That showed them, as it does now, that this building is as beloved by them as it is by us. The reactions to the building, I'm absolutely astonished by the reactions to the building. Do you remember the vitriol that was heaped on the Opera House when they did their extension, and how public and how humiliating that must have been for the people in the Opera House? I didn't say a word because I knew what was might have been coming our way. The fact is, as soon as you build anything which is so new and so extraordinary, it is bound to elicit strong reactions. So I really did expect a huge amount of negative reaction. The fingers of one hand, we talk to our customers a lot. We elicit comments when they're in the building. There is a world of social media chatter going on about the line which we track and respond to and that's negative. There have been hardly any criticisms, but people absolutely love it. Which I'm really surprised by. I thought the coffee would challenge people more than it has. Somebody tweeted a couple of weekends ago that they got confused. They were in the back, but they thought they were in New York. You know, somebody, a woman said that to me today. She was from Belfast and lived away in London. She said it felt really just really so international. I'm happy to take any questions about the Thomas Dedlin and that commission, the program president, if you fancy afterwards. Thank you.